Hello, this is John Galloway.
And this is Jesse Liberty.
And together we are working on the Full Stack Videocast series in which...
Well, and one of the things we're going to be doing is a very informal, as you can tell, series of videocasts of our peer programming.
Right, so we're going to be working together and writing a full stack application which goes all the way from the database and the server down to phone, Silverlight, web, whatever.
And back, that's right, exactly. And I think we should even admit up front that starting now, we're not 100% sure where we're going to end up, because this is going to be what I call a glass house project, and totally open, and we're going to be documenting it as we go.
So join us.
Thank you. All right, John. Today, I think what we're going to do is take a look at some really preliminary work on the phone client side.
Okay, so last time we looked at the setting up the database, basic editing stuff to get data in on the server. We're going to be doing services so that we'll communicate that over to the clients. But for right now, we want to kind of look at where we're going. And so that's why we're on the phone.
So I'm going to say Windows Phone Project. And I'm just going to go with a plain Windows Phone application.
Now, in order to get this, you had to, like, if I've got Blend installed, I need to install the phone SDK stuff in order to get that, the phone tools, whatever it is, to get this to show up, right?
You need to install the phone tools if you already have Blend, or you can download Blend for Phone, which is free, a free download if you don't have Blend.
Okay, and how does Blend for Phone compare to Blend's Ultimate Extreme Edition?
They're identical as far as I know, except that Blend for Phone will only have under project types Windows Phone. It won't have WPF and Silverlight, but you still have all the same templates and all the same functionality. Now, don't quote me when you say Ultimate Extreme. It might be that it's equal to the professional version, or I mean, I don't know which one it actually relates to, but I haven't run into any limitations on that.
Got it. Okay.
All right, so I'm going to name that Who Is That Phone Demo, bring this up. And the first thing I'm going to do, because it's incredibly easy, is I'm going to click on my application and change that name to be Who Is That?
Okay.
And then I'm going to change the page name, since it's so prominent, to, I don't know what we're going to call this. We're going to call this characteristics. What were we calling, what was the term of art we were using? I don't know. Descriptors. Description. That's what it was.
Right. I guess we should kind of, so before we were talking about products. I mean, we were just kind of doing dummy data with products, and now we're calling this Who Is That? So I guess we should kind of explain that. We're talking about people now, right?
Right. The idea of this, at least tentatively of this application, is that you meet somebody, you put in their description, and then later you can say, now, who was that guy who I met who is shorter than me, and he's balding, and I met him at PDC, he's a really bright guy, he works for Microsoft, you know, these different characteristics, and then the system will come back and say, there is no one who works at Microsoft who meets that description.
Ouch. I'm going to hang up now.
Yeah,
okay. So that makes sense.
So that was my thinking. So as a preliminary thought on this, I'm thinking that I would make a pretty simple grid with prompts and then some fill-ins. And when I started to play with that, I ran into the idea of pop-ups, which is what I'm going to show you what I did. So the first thing I'm going to do is somewhat arbitrarily make a few rows to work with. And what I'll probably end up doing here is making this a scrollable set of rows. So I'm not going to be overly careful to make these equal or anything other than workable. And then I'm going to divide this into a prompt area and a response, I guess, area, fill-in area. So, and you could do that just by clicking in the edges of the grid inside Blend. So the next thing is that I need text blocks for my prompt. So let's just put a couple in there really quickly. I'll put in full name to prompt you to do that. And I would do some work here about creating style so that these look right and are aligned properly and so on. I don't want to take the time right now to do that. And are they male or female? So the answer to that one is not yes or no. It's male or female. And what is their hair length? And then we might do hair color and eye color and things like that. And I think, but we get enough here to get a sense of what we're talking about. So for full name, we can go over here and take a text box.
You know, I mean, not to get too nutty on this, but would it make sense to have like first name and last name so we can search on those? Or I guess we can do that work as our part of our application to kind of break that up. Like if there's a space in there, we probably have a first and a last name.
Right. And I we could do that either in the processing, or we could come back to this and decide that you'll fill in the first name and last name and change it to two text boxes.
Sure. Got it. Okay.
The part that I'm interested in is just sort of laying out the general idea. So what you can do here is click on the arrow and then click on the text box and take the text out of that. And it's worth it right here to show you that if I then just run this, just with that little bit of work done, the emulator will come up and load. And what we're going to do is leave this running so that we don't have that load time. And now if I click in the text box, that automatically brings up the keyboard.
Nice. Okay, so that emulator, you didn't have to do any magic stuff to set that up. That's just part of the phone tools when you install.
It just works.
And what you're saying about the spinning up, I mean, it's actually kind of, it's like a virtual, it's an emulator, so if you leave it running, you're able to edit in Blend and then run it, and you don't have to wait for the thing to restart.
Right, and it is actually running the phone operating system, the same operating system. It's a build of the operating system.
Wow, okay.
So we'll take that out and minimize this guy. And for sex male, female, what we're going to do is come in here where the grid is, click on that little white diamond below it. And I'm going into this much detail just the first time because not every Silverlight developer, and certainly not folks who are new to this, are going to be as familiar with Blend. So I just want to show off a little bit of that. This
Absolutely.
Make things pretty easy. So I drag my stack panel approximately where I want it. And then I'm going to hit the V key, which gives me the same thing as having clicked on this. And you see if you hover over it, it says the V key will do that. So I click on this.
So what are the, I mean, I've talked to people that have worked in Blend for a while, and they get thrown off by those two arrows. There's the selection arrow, and then there's the one below it.
The one below is a direct selection. And essentially, direct selection is when you do a path, which is to say that you take the pen and you draw a line from here to there. And I can actually show you that. If I come in and take the pen and I draw in here a line, and then I draw another line, and then I draw another line, okay, and I've created this shape. Mm-hmm. If I click on with the selection arrow, then I'm selecting the whole shape, and I can move it around, and I can do fill and so on. Whereas if I click on the direct selection, now I can manipulate the shape itself.
So you're selecting the nodes. Okay,
exactly.
Right. Okay.
Exactly. Look at that. I made a fish.
That's nice. We should leave that in.
Probably.
For if we want to track people's pets.
Real possibility, especially if only if they have fish, though. Okay. So what I have is this stack panel.
That would be a yes or no. Does their fish look like this?
There you go.
Checkbox.
Very well done. Okay. So the point I was trying to make was that if I come over here and set the margins to zero all around, and then I also set it to stretch all around, that's going to fill that whole box nicely. And now my stack panel is actually in there, and I can add to the stack panel two radio buttons. So I'm going to come over to button, open that up, find radio button, and I will take the first radio button and just draw it right into the stack and call that and have that say, in fact, male. And the second thing that I want to do with that is I want to put that into a group so that it will know that it is mutually exclusive with other members of the group. So we'll call the group sex, and we'll say that male is checked. And both because I almost always check the first one, and because, unfortunately, the vast majority of people who I meet at these conferences are, in fact, male. So that's the default that I want. And then we're going to go ahead and draw the preferably not right over that, but into the same stack box. Now, because I'm having a little trouble and because I am not a complete maven at this, that's Yiddish for an expert at this, I'm going to go ahead and just write in here female and then try to figure out why it's not positioning the way I want. So let's have this be stretch and stretch, and the margins are zero all around, and that is in the stack panel. And I'm sure that there are viewers who are going, idiot, if you just do this.
Well, I'm wondering that male, One, is that too wide so that
it may well be, and it's pushing it over. So if I go over ahead and grab the selector and say to that, your width is auto and your height is auto, and why are you so wide? So let's just bring you like this. And then the female, okay, pause here because the dog is barking and I don't know what the hell I'm doing. Hold on 1 second.
No, I mean, I think this, anything you do here is really good because I think the vast majority of developers don't know anything about Blend.
Come on. Now you got to be quiet because we're recording here. Go find your bed and lie down.
Okay, let me see if I can figure this out quickly.
Yeah, no rush at all, and anything that you figure out in Blend, I think the vast majority of developers are scared of Blend and don't know anything about it and would rather monkey with that.
And now we know why they're scared of it. What's going on? Oh, I know what's wrong.
Orientation, right?
Yes, exactly. Turn the tape back on. It is on. Of course, what I have here is I have the orientation set to vertical, and what I wanted was the orientation to be horizontal, so much better. So now we have male and female where we want them. Now, for hair length, what I want to do is, what I have in mind is that it's going to say average, say, for example, as the default. But when you click on it, then it's going to give you a pop-up of potential values that you can choose from, and then when you change it, the pop-up will go away. Now, I don't want to use...
Can I ask a question that's completely off the rails? So this is all your standard editing stuff, and I know that I've heard the term choosers for Windows Phone.
Yes, let me explain about choosers and launchers. They are not related to this.
Okay.
But it's a perfectly valid question. A chooser allows you to open up one of the various applications and get back a value. So, for example, you might use a chooser to open up the camera and get back an image. A launcher lets you open up an application and it's more fire and forget. So you might, for example, use a chooser to open up your contacts, pick a couple contacts, and then in your application fill out a note, and then use a launcher to hand all that to the mail application. And you wouldn't get anything back from the mail application. You would just launch that and it would take your information and create a mail message with it.
Okay. All right.
So what we need to do now in order to make this work is we need to have a text box, and we need to and the reason I want to use actually a text block rather than a text box is that a text box you can fill in, and so if you click inside of it, it's going to bring up the keyboard. And what I'd rather do is use a text block, which is like a label. It's display only. So let's go ahead and take a text block, but because I haven't yet figured out how to click on the text block and have it trigger the pop-up that I want, we're also going to add a button. So what we're going to do as a first approximation to this is put another stack panel in here and put a text block and a button, and then we'll build our little pop-up, which is really the point of what I wanted to show you today. So I'm going, whoops, I started to put the text block in. I'm going to control Z out of that and put in a stack panel first. So there's my stack panel, and I will do the same thing, which is I'll quickly draw this to a first approximation, set the margins to be zero all around and the alignments to be stretch all around. That gives me the stack panel, which this time I will remember to set the orientation to horizontal.
So... You've got a grid, which is kind of like a table, and then a stack panel is something that's like a grid, but it's just one direction. It's left or right. Or, I mean, it's horizontal or vertical.
Right. It's either one thing on top of another or one thing next to another. Exactly right. In there. So let's go ahead and get a text block and put that inside the text, inside the stack panel. Boy, talking today is just tough. Okay. So now I have...
I noticed
in my stack panel. Go ahead.
Well, so you're going in and resetting margins and padding quite a bit. What are their margins? They're all margins. Sorry.
Yeah. What I've been doing is setting the margins, and the easier way to set the margins. See this little square here?
Yeah.
Which is called the advanced options square. It's a very big name for a very small square. When you click that, the first choice is reset, and that'll set them all to zero all at once.
Perfect.
And then what I can do is put in It has the text block, so I can tell it to auto set width and auto set height. And then instead of stretch, I can say I want you to align left and align center, and that's a whole lot better.
Okay.
And then I'm going to go over to the text and set the hair length to average as my starting point. Now I'm ready to build the pop-up. And the way I'm going to build the pop-up is I'm going to start with a rectangle so that I can create a background color very easily. So I'm just going to draw a rectangle on, and I have to immediately acknowledge and thank Corey Schumann, who is the person who showed me how to do all much of this. Let's set the background color on that. So we'll go to fill, and we can even set it to be a gradient, although my buddy Dave Platt, who wrote Why Software Sucks, would say, why are you setting a gradient if the gradient isn't going to give you any information at all? And the answer to that is, you're right, Dave, it should just be a solid color. So we'll make it a solid color. And I'll have to tell him that his ghost influenced our decision making. Okay, so there we have a rectangle as a solid color. Of course, it's not a rectangle that I want. What I want is the rectangle, what I want is a grid with that background. So what I'm going to do is go to the rectangle itself and right click and say group into a grid. And what that does is it takes all of the controls that you've clicked on, all of the images and anything you've clicked on, and groups them all into a grid. Since I've only clicked on the one, it's going to turn, it's essentially going to put a grid around that rectangle. Now nice. I have a grid with the background I want, which is kind of a neat trick. The next thing that I want to do is I want to put a list box into this grid so that I can put my members into that list box. So I'm going to come over to my assets and to my controls and type list box.
You know, that's a nice tip there, that anything, I've noticed people that are advanced with Blend use the search quite a bit. Like you've got the search up in the left, and then also for properties, the instant filtering on those is huge, because for some of these things you get tons of properties. And
correct.
So just typing in, you know, text or whatever, or opacity, it instantly filters those properties down.
That's right. Now, I could have gone over to the chevron and opened up all of my controls as well, and you can have this in various configurations as well. But it's just a whole lot easier to just search for it, grab that list box, put it into the grid, and then, again, I'm going to reset the margins to zero, and it's stretched. So now it's filling that whole grid, which is just what I want. Okay, the next thing that I want to do is I want to populate this grid with some data. So I'm going to come over to data, and I want to have some test data to work with. So if I come over here to data, and I click on the project, notice there's no sample data. Some of the templates provide sample data, but I can always create sample data right here. So I'm going to say create sample data. And you can import this from an XML file. You can create it based on a class. You can also create it based on real data. You could have it from an object data source. You can use your code behind. I'm just going to create some sample data. And I'm going to call this hair length sample data. And again, I can put it into the project, or I can put it into the document. I'll go ahead and put it into the document. And do I want to enable sample data when the application is running? And the answer to that is yes. I'm going to use the sample data when the project is running. So I'll say OK. And it's going to create for me a collection with two properties named Property 1 and Property 2. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to modify that by saying, and notice that, by the way, Property 1 is currently, let's see what type the Property 1 is. It's notice it's got Greek ink for that, and it's of type string, and property 2 here is a Boolean. So that's going to be, that would show itself as a checkbox next to whichever one you want to choose. And that works out pretty well. So let's say that property 1 will be the length, and property 2 will be, I don't know, let's call it this one. Just for ducks. And we have a collection inside that. Okay. Now what we want to do is apply that collection to this list box. So we're going to grab the collection and bring it over. And notice what it says is data bind. I don't know if you can read that. Data bind list box item source to this collection, which is ideal. It's just what we want. We want to bind the item source property to the collection we just created.
Yeah.
That's very nice, right? Now, those are not hair lengths, unfortunately. So we're going to go in to the data and say edit the sample data. All right. And I will change this to be bald and uncheck that one, I guess. And then Let's try that. And then change this to very short or very shoprit, either one, which is an important new style. And short and average. And I'm going to use short as the check mark because we set average as the default before, and I want to see the change. Average, long, and very long. That'll do it for us. And I believe that's 6. Is that 2, 4, 6? So I'm going to come here and tell it to set the number of records is 10. If I click in there and move my mouse to the left, notice that I can increase or decrease the numbers by moving to the left or the right.
Now, I think if I remember right, can you double-click there and just type?
Yes, absolutely.
Which
but
is so
much cooler to do the other.
I like those where they've got the sliders, but sometimes when you want to type an exact number, it's great that you can get in there and type if you want.
Absolutely. So notice we have bald, very short, short. But these are one below the other, right? Mm-hmm. So I can go into this list box and into the item template for this list box and put them next to each other as well. I'm not going to take your time. That's pretty straightforward. Actually, I think what I'm going to do is simplify our lives even more than that, and remove the checkbox from the data and rebind
mm-hmm.
because it's going to make it easier for us to see the effect. And
yeah.
And it is a list box, so we can work. We don't actually need the checkbox. We can work with the list box item selection change event, and that'll work very nicely. So
sure.
Second thought, I think I won't bother with that. But what you would do is create a data template, which is also straightforward. And we can look at that on the next one if you like. With this in place, the question is, how do I make it appear and disappear? And mm-hmm. so there's two parts to that. One is animating it, and then the other is the code that would actually do that. And so for animating it, what we're going to do is we're going to add visual states to the entirety of this whole piece, which is this grid right here. So let's start by naming that grid, because that's going to represent the entire pop-up. So this is our hair length pop-up. Okay. Now what we want to do, notice this stack panel is the stack panel that holds the, yes, this is going to hold the text block, and it's going to hold our button when we're ready to do the work, and this is the pop-up itself. And it's positioned not exactly what we want at the moment. Go ahead.
I don't know UI-wise what you would think, but what if you just, when you click on average, that shows the pop-up?
Right. That would be absolutely my intention is for clicking on this and not have a button at all. But I just haven't sorted out yet how to, because this is a text block, it can't get the focus. I could use a text box, which can get the focus, but then we'll bring up the keyboard. So I just need to do a little looking into it. And so to simplify life, right now we have this stack panel and this text block, and what I'm going to do is add a toggle button next to it. So let me do that rather than just repeatedly saying I'm going to. So we'll come into the button and we will pick a don't see toggle button. So here's what I'm going to do because I'm being honest and not going ahead and finding out the right way to do it. I'll show you the way I actually would do it, which is I would grab the button, put the button in. Now, notice this is a regular real button, not a toggle button, and what I want is a toggle button. So now I'm going to go over to the XAML. Don't tell anybody who knows me that I did this. And go find that button and change it to a toggle button.
Well, that is a nice thing. I end up doing that where it's like, it's great where you can do everything in the designer, but sometimes you're like, look, I know what I want to do, and this, like...
Right. Looks like it's religious about it. Exactly.
Exactly. And another thing that's pretty cool, you've done a fair amount of work, and there's not really all that much XAML. Like, I would have worried that, hey, we're going to have this huge 4,000 lines of XAML, and it really is actually pretty clean there.
Yeah, it's startling to me how much they have tightened up the XAML output from generating it within the designer.
Hmm.
Okay, so here we have this button. It says pop. It's of type toggle button, and we're going to come back to that because we're going to use that to be able to determine whether we want to open or close this pop-up. But before we do that, we need to create the animations for this pop-up so that we can then have the button do something. So in order to do that, what I'm going to do is click on here and then switch over to states, and I'm going to add some states to this essentially control that we've created. So let's come in here and say add state group. And I'm going to call that the hair length pop-up states. And notice it gave me base automatically. And so now what I'm going to do within the hair length pop-up states is I'm going to add two states. One, can I have a state, please? Thank you. And that state is going to be called pop-up visible. And then I'll add a second state, which is going to be pop-up collapsed. Now, I don't want to start recording what those are just yet. I know that the base is going to have either visible or collapsed. I don't know yet which one, and I'll show you how we're going to determine that. What I want is when I'm working, I want to be able to see this, but when it's running, I want it to start out collapsed. And I'll show you how we do that in just a minute. But what we want to do first is work out the animation for showing it and for hiding it. So let's go over to the animation view, which you can do with F6 or by changing workspace animation. And what that does is it reconfigures so that the animation has more room on the bottom, which is very nice. So we're going to open up the animation window. And then, again, I'm going to take this 100% and just start moving to the right until it shows me the breakup of that first second down to 0.2 and 0.3, which is what I want. You're still with me on what I'm doing?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so let's scroll this down so we can see it. So when I'm in pop-up collapsed, what I want is for this thing to go away, and I would like to animate that going away. So what I'm going to do is at 0.2 of a second, I'm going to set the opacity to 0, and I'm going to go down to transform and scale it down to 0. So let's go to scale, which is at 1, and say 0 and 0. Now, if I run my, and why did you not record that? Because I'm not in recording. I turned recording off. Very clever. So let's go put this, let's go undo what I just did and remember to turn recording on. And we leave these mistakes in, do we? It makes us ever so charming. Okay, fine. So we're going to start recording.
You can cut it out if you want.
There you go. So we start recording, and then I'm going to come to my hair length pop-up, click on that, and set opacity to 0. And then also set the scale, click on scale and set that to 0 on both the X and the Y. And then we can look at what that looks like by playing it. Okay, that disappears very nicely and it's gone. However, it's still in my control tree.
Right.
It's not removed, and I want it to be removed. So once it's completely collapsed, what I'm going to do is at 0.3 of a second, let's move ahead 0.1 of a second, I'm going to set the visibility to collapsed, and that takes it out of the control tree.
Okay.
So notice that's going to happen after my animation runs. So the animation is going to make it disappear, and then I'll pop it out and set it to collapsed. So okay. That's pop-up collapsed. Let's go over to pop-up visible. And recording is on, good. And so we're going to say, now for pop-up visible, what we need is for the visibility to go from collapsed to visible at time 0, right away. That doesn't mean that we have to show it, but we do need to record that it's visible. So we're just going to go in and to here where it says visible, and rather than manipulating this and fooling around with starting with collapsed and oh this and that, I'm just going to come into the advanced features and say record the current value, and that will put at 0 seconds that it's visible.
Okay.
Now I can go ahead to 2 seconds and say that
two tenths of a second,
thank you, and say that I want to record that at 0.2 of a second the opacity should be 100%. And that the X and Y should each be 1. So I can just record those current values at 0.2 of a second. And what this means is that when I play this, you're not going to see a whole lot because it's starting out in the non-collapsed state. And so I'm just reinforcing that. But the reason that I don't record this as being zero and zero, and the opacity is zero at 0 seconds, is that if you start toggling back and forth, you're going to get a whole jerkiness because it has to go back to that starting state.
And
I want that jerkiness, so this way it'll be cleaner. But we'll test that when we get the toggle in place.
So when you say record current value, it's not saying just start with wherever you're at. It's saying record the current value that you've currently got it set.
That I've got it set to at whatever time I've got it set to.
Got it.
So I'm going to click on this to stop recording now the animations. And if we go look at the XAML that's behind this, what we've now done is we've put those animations, those storyboards, in here for those transitions. So you can see them right here. Here's our visual state group pop-up visible, and here's our animations for moving that, making it disappear, and here's pop-up, making it appear, excuse me, and here's our animation for making it disappear.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all in there. So now the next step is we want to have this button affect what happens with the display. And I'm using the mouse wheel now to just resize that. So what I can do now with this button is to add a behavior to the button state to switch back and forth between whether it's visible or not. So to do that, what I'm going to do is come over to my assets window, and I'm in the state window, and it is full screen because I'm still in this animation view. So let me hit F6 and get back. F6 would be nice. There we go. And get back to this view. And that... Yes, I hit it twice, and it caught up with me. Okay. And now what I can do is get out of the state view and instead go into the assets view and come down to behaviors. So what we're going to do is open up our behaviors and grab go to state action and put that on the button. We want this button, this toggle button, to change what state we go to, because remember, we just created those two states. So I'm going to drop that into place, and notice that that sits on toggle button. Toggle button is not a great name for that. In fact, it has no name. It's just defaulting to the type. So let's call that hair length pop-up toggle. Okay. Then we'll know when we look over here what that is. And let's call the action, the very first action that we're putting, is going to be go to hair length. Actually, we don't have to call it go to. We can just call it hair length pop-up visible state. All right, I am going to call it go-to. Sorry, I think it's worth taking the time to come up with a good naming convention. And I do, as I know you do, like to use lengthy names that describe fully what we're actually trying to accomplish.
Yep.
And I think that...
it's worth the time now, because later when we're trying to find it or some other developer's looking at it, it's better to be verbose.
Right, exactly. And when you look down here at the objects and timeline, you can now see that this stack panel has a text block and it has the hair length pop-up toggle. It's pretty clear what that is. And then the action that's associated with it says go to state action is the type, and the name of that go to state is go to hair length pop-up. So it's pretty clear what that's doing. Now notice it filled in hair length pop-up, it filled in what the source is, that's the button, but it's not clicking on the button that I want. It's setting that button to checked. So I'll go ahead and set it to checked. The target name, it's already got filled in for me. All I need to do is pick the state name, and in fact, the dropdown has the two states that we want to have. So when it's checked, I want pop-up visible to be the state.
Now, how did it know your target name?
Because when I dragged onto this button,
yeah,
it went and looked at what in this outer grid has state.
Got it.
And we added those states here. So the next time when I do the second one, it we'll have to give it a little bit more help as to which thing, because there'll be more than one thing with state. Okay, so you can imagine that what we want to do is add a second go to state action for that same button. And I can drop it on over here. I thought I could drop it on over here. Yes, I can drop it on over here.
Is there a way to... We're doing one state to show and one state to hide. Is there a way to just like have to just reverse that?
To reverse it, or you're saying to have it be a toggle state?
Yeah.
That, as far as I know, the only behaviors that are available for the phone are these, and so there's go to state action. You could do it in code, certainly.
Okay.
Right? You could write a go to state action behavior in code, and more accurately, what you would do is you put two flags in your code, and then based on flipping the bit, you would call go to state action on one or the other.
Okay.
And you could parameterize that if it really bothered you that there were two of them. So this is going to be, I'm going to take the name from the first one, grab it, copy it, go to the second one, paste it in, and then just change it from pop-up visible to pop-up collapsed state. And then we'll change this from click to now we want when it's unchecked, and then we want the state to be collapsed. Now, this is, before we go test this, we also want to have that when we start the application, that this is going to go to invisible. And so later I'm going to come back and add a go to state action for the condition of having the application load, the page load, that will make this hide, because right now it's going to start out visible.
Now, couldn't we just set that the visibility property to collapse when you start, you know, the what is it? You know what I mean?
Just set absolutely. You can, and there are two ways to do it. We could do it right now, but then I wouldn't be able to see what I'm working on. Or we can do that in the code, in loaded, is to just set that to collapsed.
Okay. No, but I mean, so this makes sense to have it, and you may want to cut this out here, but it makes sense to have it visible now that we're working on it, but when you go on to work on hair color and other things, you're not going to want to keep it visible the
correct
whole time.
Right? So at that point, I might as well just set the state to the initial state to collapsed.
Okay.
And that'll make it invisible rather than visible, and that will make it also start out invisible. So we can go ahead and do that. The way to do that, by the way, you want to be careful is to not just click in here, because that's going to hit the list box, and that's not the thing we want. What we want is the whole grid. Let's run this just to get a sense of what we've got so far. So if we say run project. Build that up. And, okay, here we are. And when I click on it, it animates into place. And when I unclick on it, it disappears nicely. So the next piece of this is going to be able to click on bald instead of clicking on this.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that occurs to me is the possibility of putting a button behind the text box, and then you'll appear to click on the text block, but you'll actually be clicking on the button.
Or what, you know, you could even just have that be a button, like not a text box, but
oh, that's
just
an excellent idea. Make this a button.
Yeah.
That's a great
and
idea.
Just no border.
And then just change the text on the button.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. I like that a lot. Notice I've got it so that when you click on it, it changes the text in here.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that works is, let's open up Visual Studio to the same project. So bring in Visual Studio, and yes, I have changed things. And what we're doing here is, I said I have a loaded event, and on my loaded event, I set the selection changed event on that list box. And when you change the selection on the list box, I'm going into my selected item, casting that as an expression.blend.sampledata.hairlengthsampledata. And by the way, IntelliSense does this for you. So if you say, let me just to show that to you, if I say hair length list box dot selected item as, and as soon as I put in expression dot, it says you want blend, yes, dot, do you want the sample data, yes, dot, do you want that? So I mean, it knows
nice
what's okay there, right? So I go all the way down to the item. That's what I'm casting that I'm getting, that I'm going to set the length on, and I set the length, which is the property of that data, and I set that to string. And now that I have that as a string, I can put that into the hair length text blocks text. And we will change that to be a button. And set it,
okay,
instead of text, it'll be its content. And so that's how, when you're clicking on the list box, you're seeing, let's bring that back up, you're seeing that the text block is changing based on the change in the selected item.
So that's, it's interesting to see how, you know, like it's always interesting to see how someone else works. That's something, though, that I regularly do is I'll have Blend open and Visual Studio open, both on the same project. And if you edit one, it'll say this, you know, it'll keep them in sync.
Yes.
But that's handy because then sometimes you get to a spot where you're like, I just want to write some code. And you can pop over here pretty quick and do that.
Right. And there's no import or export. It's just it's changed outside. You want me to update? Yes, bang. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very quick. And what I'm doing more and more, I've been preaching it for a long time, I'm now trying to actually live by that more and more, is essentially all of the UI and all of the animation and all of that kind of work in Blend and virtually all of the C# in Visual Studio. And you can do either in the other, but using the tools for what they're good at makes a lot of sense.
You know, I mean, just one thing, looking back at what you did there, the use of visual states and behaviors are just really key to be able to do that because you don't have to write any code to do quite a bit of stuff. Like you're saying, when this happens, show this animation, do several things all at, you know, at times I specify, and you're able to pretty easily set that. And then by looking at the XAML, it actually, like I wouldn't want to type that by hand, but you can read it and you say, okay, this makes sense what it's doing.
Right. Now, for animations, there's no question that I would do this in Blend and let it spit out the XAML. In terms of behaviors, I think you could make an argument for doing it in C#, and it wouldn't be hard. You'd create a flag, and then you would go in and say, so what behavior do we have when you push the button, you know, run this animation? It's not very hard to capture the button click and check its status is checked, is unchecked, and then run the animation from code. But by doing it with the behaviors, it's very, very easy to change it in Blend, and I didn't need to write that code, and it's not terribly complex code. So it, mm-hmm. you know, it's somewhat fielder's choice as to whether you use the behaviors or not. I think they were originally intended to empower designers who didn't really want to code, but, you know, I feel sufficiently comfortable that I can code when I need to, that when I don't need to and the behavior is going to do it for me, then why not use that?
Yeah.
And it's pretty easy to maintain, and it's not like it's hidden. The behaviors are, you know, fully visible. As soon as you open it up, you can see where the behaviors are. If you start getting into any place where the complexity of the behavior is bewildering, and now I have to trust this behavior, it's, as I say, it's easy enough to just go write that in C#.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what I have so far. Clearly, it's merely a start on this, but you can see that the other things that will come after hair color and eye color and so on will be very much the same business.
This, I think this is really cool to see what you can do in this amount of time. Of course, one thing in the back of my mind here is that we're going to want to share this kind of information client to server. So, you know, not only the selected values, but the available values, like the different hair lengths and all that. So that's something we'll have to figure out. Huh?
Right. And we could decide whether to continue to use the sample data or to get that data out of a database or out of an enumeration. I mean, there are a lot of different ways that we can mm-hmm. do that. If I were fully proficient in Blend as I would like to be, I think what we just looked at is about 15 to 20 minutes.
Well, you know, but it is good because I think we did take some time to look in more depth at some things because I know there are a lot of developers who don't really have any experience with Blend and are a little scared of it. And so, you know, I think it is nice to kind of see it in a little more detail. And, you know, it's not, it takes a little bit of time to get used to, but it's not like you have to be a beret wearing designer to get it. Like you're dropping controls on things and you're setting properties and
you can in fact learn Blend without wearing a turtleneck, which is astonishing. And we're at a particular moment in history today when we're recording this at the towards the end of October of 2010, when Blend 4 is the Blend of choice, and there aren't a lot of Blend 4 books out yet, but they're coming very soon, and that will certainly smooth out the learning curve for a lot of folks.
Mm-hmm. One other nice thing, just kind of recapping stuff, but here's that the you didn't have to mess with setting up styles, and this looks like a Windows Phone 7 design. Like, in other words, you know, you've got all the fonts and the colors and things are generally what you'd expect, which is kind of cool, like all the styles set up for you.
That's exactly right. And what I've been saying about that is that you can make a Silverlight application that doesn't look at all like a phone, Windows Phone application, but you have to work at it. And the default case, the path of least resistance, is to use the styles that are cooked in and the themes that are cooked in, and then you get a very much a Windows Phone looking application. Now, this application suffers from the fact that, you know, all my taste is in my mouth, and so the rows are uneven and they're too spaced apart. Even I can tell that. And I think if you added a designer, I'm sure there are designers who are watching this who are just cringing because things don't line up properly. And all of that I can fix. But then if you add a designer, they may come in and say, okay, let's work a little bit with these font sizes and so on, and your choice of colors. And I'm not sure this is the best highlight color. You know, it may not be the ideal choice. But that said, you know, you can get a lot. We got a fair amount functioning pretty quickly because even with taking our time, I don't think we spent more than half an hour on this.
Mm-hmm. And you know, this is something where you can go in and change the design without. I mean, it's in XAML, so it's easier enough for a designer to change it or sit with you as you change it and
whack me
colors.
In the head periodically. Exactly right.
Right.
That's right.
Cool.
I sort of picture this Jackie Mason as a designer sitting next to me, you know. Oh, it's going to be a nice design. It's not going to be a great design. It's going to be a big design. Not too big a design. We'll move it over here. We'll move it to the left. You know, that kind of either that or my buddy, one of the best designers I've ever met, who I just picture sitting on the other side of me, just cringing and crying and weeping into his cereal, you know, and then finally shoving me out of the way and fixing it. So that, all of that is real. But I have to say that when, you know, when I was independent, as an independent consultant, I would often put things in front of people. Oh, perfect. So resuming here. Where were we?
We were talking about design and stuff.
Right.
But this is pretty cool to see what you can do in this amount of time. So
in any case, we have plenty of work ahead to make this even workable. And then we're going to want to hook that up to the data that you've been working on converting your data over to this data that we're tracking.
Yep.
So much ahead of us, but the longest journey and all that.
Right. Great success. Okay.
So for, what are we calling this? Full stack?
For the full stack.
For the full stack, this is Jesse Liberty.
And this is John Galloway.